Today is December 31st, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 139, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Dude, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note. And it, you know what, Jeff?
What?
This is going to be our 2008 wrap up.
Right.
Right. And this is, I think, for our show, this has been the year of the...
Yes, it has.
Well, I think it's time we retire that.
You know, on one hand, I hate to see it go, but... You know, 2009, it's going to be a new year, so...
It's going to be a new year. It's going to be a new thing.
Right.
It's going to be a new thing. So, I think we should retire, but I think we should go out with a bang.
Well, that goes without saying.
All right. Well, with that in mind...
Oh, I can't wait.
Shoot us a note at AWR.
Holy crap.
MacObserver.com. Wait for it. At MacObserver.com. All right, that's it. We're done with that.
I think you put an eye out with that.
You poke your eye out, kid.
See? Oh, and by the way, I didn't realize you changed your title to Dude. I don't know if I can get your business cards reprinted in time for Macworld now.
Well, I expect them to be fully reprinted for Macworld.
I'm sure you do.
Dude. Brian Chaffin, Dude. What's your title? Dude. What do you do? Dude stuff?
Yeah, I just do dude stuff. It says on my card here, Dude. I mean...
Yeah, speaking of dudes, by the way, you can follow me if you actually want to. You can follow me at Twitter. That's TMO Brian, and Brian is spelled with a Y.
I follow you at Twitter.
I know you do.
And you entertain me, so thank you.
Yay!
And if you want to follow me at Twitter,
I follow you at Twitter.
You do.
And you entertain me.
Well, good, because that's why I'm here. My purpose on this planet is to entertain you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't tell anyone my Twitter name. It's J Gamet, JGAMET.
And this week we're doing I don't know. It's not a special show, but we're doing something different. We're doing a look back at 2008, at the important stories of 2008. Today is December 31st. It's New Year's Eve, and we're podcasting. What's up with that?
We're that dedicated. Or we're sad little men and we have no lives. I'm going with dedication.
Dedicated. Dedication. I have, you know, tonight, I have a very exciting evening of my wife making some cookies.
Nice.
For New Year's Day, because Japanese Americans, New Year's Day is like a big day. There's lots and lots and lots and lots of food. And so she's taking cookies for a bake-off with her aunt. And so she's making cookies tonight. And then we're going to watch a movie. Get smart.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's a very exciting New Year's Eve evening for us. Wild and crazy.
Well, I'm going to be going to a friend's New Year's Eve party. It's kind of a theme party. Sort of a – I forgot what she called it. But the gist of it is need to look nice and need to have pink and black. So, get this. I'm putting on a tie to go out for New Year's Eve.
Is it a piano tie with pink keys?
No. Oh, dude.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh.
Well, wouldn't that be cool for this?
In this context. No, I'm not wearing that tie. But I did find a thin black tie, and it does have a pattern that seems appropriate for the evening. But... yeah, I haven't had a tie on for a long time, so I'll tweet a picture of it.
You should do that. You should do that. Well, anyway, so that's our exciting evening, but we do want to do this. I don't know. I'm actually kind of looking forward to this, to this episode of the show, because it has been a pretty big year for Apple, even while, of course, for things like the stock, it's been a pretty crushing year, to say the least. But we'll get into more of that in a bit. I guess Jeff's going to do an intro for us, and then we'll jump into the show.
Yeah, that's the plan. This week, we take a look back at 2008 and how the year played out for Apple. 2008 was the year of the iPhone. The Mac's market share is on the rise, even as the company's stock value dropped. Public focus shifted away from the iPod. Steve Jobs' health became a hot topic, and it also turned out to be the year of the App Store.
All righty. Well, normally, of course, this is where we read the news to you.
Right.
This week we're not doing that. We're jumping right into the stories because this is the recap show. And I think, well, really, this is what Jeff and I decided before we started recording. But this has been the year of the iPhone for real.
Yes, it has.
And I think that's probably the single most important story about Apple this year.
It certainly has been the biggest focus for the media and I would say for the public as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And so this year we saw, of course, the release of the iPhone 3G.
Right. And I think that's what really propelled the iPhone into the forefront. When the first generation iPhone came out, it was amazingly popular. But it was also available only to a limited market. And when the 3G version came out and Apple struck deals to be able to distribute it in countries around the world, I think that's pretty much when someone hit the warp speed button for the iPhone.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And, you know, so the original iPhone was released in the summer, at the end of the summer of 2007. And, you know, it definitely was a big deal at the time, but, it sort of had a buzz status.
Right.
And what we've seen in 2008 is that Apple has become one of the dominant players in the smartphone market. And everybody, it seems, is effectively following Apple, even though they are not the top player in the smartphone market. They have the number one phone. But they only have the one phone.
Right. And it's there's a bit of irony in there, especially because before the first iPhone came out, you had companies like Palm, the president of Palm, saying, oh, well, you know, Apple, they've never done this before. They're coming into an established market. It took us several years to get our feet in this market and figure out what to do. And, of course, they're referring to the Treo. So they weren't worried. They knew Apple wasn't going to be able to have a successful phone. And
no, do you remember what Steve Ballmer said about how, you know, like the iPhone wasn't going to matter much,
and right,
Windows Mobile is going to you know, end up winning the this battle in the long run? And, you know, now no one's even talking about Windows Mobile when you're looking at the smartphone market. It's Nokia, it's RIM, that's Research in Motion with the BlackBerry,
right?
Apple number two.
Right.
Palm, and then Nokia, because Nokia actually has a much bigger presence in the smartphone market outside the U.S.
Right. And no one talks about Windows Mobile.
No one's even talking about Windows Mobile.
You know, I think when Steve Ballmer finished that quote, he wrapped it up by throwing a chair and squealing and going, developers, or something like that.
developers.
That's just not right.
You know, it suddenly occurred to me that while there are certainly differences in their voices, there is a certain back of the throat quality to both Bill and Ballmer, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer.
You know,
just saying,
I hadn't thought about that before, but yeah, and you know, I think it plays into their Muppet heritage. I'm assuming at some point in both of their paths, there's Muppet parentage somewhere.
That could actually be. But be that as it may, back to it being the year of the iPhone.
Oh, right.
One of the stories that we were looking at the end of the year was about how, can research, compete with the iPhone. It's fascinating to me to see people putting Apple in the driver's seat when Research in Motion still has, several times the market share that Apple has.
Right, they do. But
everyone's putting Apple in the driver's seat when it comes to the iPhone. And when I say everyone, I'm not just talking about the tech press. I'm not just talking about the Mac press. I'm talking about, the world. It seems like Apple has the product to beat. Apple is the company that's in the driver's seat. Apple is the one setting the standards. Apple is the one that is pushing the boundaries. Apple is the one to follow, even by the companies that are leading them. And that's fascinating.
It is, but it's also not surprising to me. So if you take a look at the Macintosh, it may not be the most dominant computer on the market right now, but all the other computer companies look to Apple to see what's going on with computer designs. And so
that's true.
So it's just a natural extension of that when Apple came out with the iPhone, that companies would start watching to see what Apple's doing in that market, and then they start mimicking those features.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And it all comes down to, a lot of people might simply dismiss or credit. I'm not going to say dismiss. A lot of people might credit Apple's success in this particular area to Steve Jobs' vision or his ability to harness the vision of others or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a more important thing about what Apple is doing. And it's something that you and I have talked about in other contexts, any number of times, and written about it any number of times. But Apple is the lone computer maker that makes a healthy and sustainable profit on its computers and its MP3 players and its phones.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? And the result of them being able to make a profit, a healthy profit, on their products is they get to do things like innovate. They get to do things like find, new ways of doing things or new ways of presenting things or just even paying some designers who don't suck ass. To make their computers, it's not like Apple has some kind of lock on good taste. Well, they do. I mean, but it's not like Apple has a lock that no one else can break. It's just no one else can afford to approach business the way Apple does because Apple's the only one who's actually making a profit on their damn products.
I think a big part of that is the fact that. And this is something we've discussed before. Apple controls the entire widget. I mean, from the software side to the hardware side, that's their baby. So they make the entire completed, integrated piece. And I think that has a big impact on the quality of the overall product as well, simply because Apple doesn't have to cater to other companies that rely on whatever the product is, like computer designers, they're having to rely on Microsoft and cater to some of Microsoft's whims. But on the other side of it, Microsoft is having to cater to all of these PC developers that don't want to change components. And so that you have this design by committee, and that's clearly not working that well.
And who is the only customer that they're appealing to? And I have an answer for that.
The
only customer these other companies are appealing to is the customer that wants to pay the least amount of money.
Right.
And why I've often called Dell the toaster maker of the computer world. They've done everything possible to devalue their own product in every conceivable way until it is little more than a toaster in terms of importance or desirability.
That just doesn't seem like a good business strategy to me.
Not in the long term. It, of course, did quite well for Dell for, a couple of decades, right?
Right. But now that doesn't seem to be working as well for them.
No. And it's funny, too, because the company that really looks to be strongest, I think, is HP again.
You know, I'm going to agree with you on that, and I hadn't thought about it until you said it. But, yeah, over the past year especially, I've seen quite a resurgence in HP on the PC side. And, mm-hmm. And now they're the company that makes what I consider to be, bar none, the best display you can get for any type of creative design work.
Which display would that be?
That would be the Dream Color display.
And that's the one that you went to go see at DreamWorks, right?
Right. It's a display that HP co-designed with DreamWorks Entertainment, specifically so that DreamWorks could use this display for standardized color management across all of the animation design that they do. And right. It blew my socks off. And that's right. not and something you know, I would have thought I would have been saying. HP makes the best display I've ever seen.
HP is doing probably – well, I mean, you know, Dell – the only research and development that Dell does, at least that I can tell, is – the way I euphemistically put it is how to build their computers with one less screw. And which is, yeah. you know, how – that is how they sell computers so cheap. It's not just about volume for Dell. Dell has put billions of dollars – into finding ways to make their computers cheaper, right? That's why they're so cheap. It's again, it's not just volume. It's not just direct sales. All of Dell's research and development has gone into this area, whereas Apple has put R&D into things like new products and things like the dock connector for the iPod, whether or not you like it. Things like the mini display port, whether or not you like it. The FireWire 800, which is probably one of the biggest new things to come out of Apple in terms of like you know some kind of new technology. In several years, Apple used to do even more of this stuff, but I think that Steve has really honed their R&D to be very specific to their very specific products.
Right.
HP is clearly doing it. They're at least doing research and development in the printer world. They're doing research and development in the display world. I don't really think they're spending a lot of money doing R&D in computing technologies. But they're probably spending more than Dell.
Oh, I'm certain that they are. And I know that they're paying attention to a lot of the details in their computer design that maybe they weren't paying attention to before. But I mean, even down to the point where they're paying attention now to acoustics in the computers, and that's
that used to be Apple's sole
right.
domain.
And so now we have two companies that are doing that: Apple and HP.
Right, and then of course the other people doing research in the computer world are Microsoft and Intel.
Yeah,
that's it.
How about that?
How about that? Anyway, we kind of got off our topic of this being the year of the iPhone.
But, you know, all fits together. And
it does all fit together.
And we'll leave it up to you, our wonderful listeners, to figure out how that all fits together.
Because we don't know.
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you tell us, and that way we can go, oh, yeah, hey, we're cool.
Yeah.
Be that as it may, I guess that this would be a good way to segue into the fact that Apple made some tremendous market share gains.
They did, and
this year.
And I think that's great because that gives us more to talk about.
Well, it makes Apple healthier, but you know my big thing about Mac market share is the long-term viability of the platform and the number of developers that can make a healthy living within our ecosystem.
Right.
The larger that number is, the better our experience is.
Right. And now that we're seeing this, I'm going to call it an accelerated trend towards gaining more market share. Now I think we're starting to see more developers take a serious look at developing for the Mac, whereas before they wouldn't have considered developing at all, or it would have been an afterthought.
Well, if you go back to the 90s, I remember talking to a developer of it was a photo viewing application at the time, and they were actually cross platform. But one of the things that that we talked about and that I actually found was the case with other developers too. If you were going to try and develop a product for the Mac platform, this is pre-Mac OS X,
mm-hmm.
venture capitalists would not touch you.
Wow.
They were not interested in any way whatsoever in putting any money into development for the Mac platform because, you know, basically that's not where they saw the money going. And I think I haven't talked to anyone about the specific issue recently, but what we have seen are more and more products either coming out for the Mac or porting themselves to the Mac or just, you know, in other ways paying attention to the Mac market. And that's a product of Apple's substantially increased market share.
You know, I think another thing that's helping with that is that Apple makes all of their developers' tools available for free. And, you know, it used to be if you wanted to do serious Mac development, you'd have to go out and buy, Code Warrior. And now, I mean, when you buy a Mac OS X installer disk, it includes the developer tools.
Well, okay, and that is great, but I would actually have to give props to Microsoft for, over the years, having done a much better job of catering to their developers, of doing every little thing that they can for their developers in every way possible. And certainly Apple has changed that in recent years.
Yes,
certainly.
They have. Yeah.
Yeah, you look at the WWDC and all the things that are going on in the WWDC and the large increase in the number of attendees.
Right. That's a very telling tale right there.
Yes, it is. And that is absolutely important. Apple has closed that gap. But I think that Microsoft still gets the nod for doing a better job of doing everything they can for – I mean, you know, I'm interrupting myself, but I think that the only people that Microsoft don't cater well to are their end users.
I'm laughing because it's absolutely true. And
yeah, they do a good job for the developers. They do a good job for their OEM licensees or licensors, licensees. But you know, they seldom really pay attention to what the user actually wants. That's just not in Microsoft's mindset.
Well, it's not necessary for their business model, because their business model is to gain and maintain market share, and you don't cater to your customers if you're going for total market dominance.
Right. Right. You don't. And there's a bad side to that too, because Microsoft does cater to their developers so well. I think that's part of the whole thing. This is another thing that you and I have talked about over the last year, and that is the good enough mentality.
Oh yes,
that you find on the Windows side.
Yeah, which that really bothers me. I mean, if you're going to spend good money on something, why don't you spend that good money on something that's good and not just good enough?
Right, which is what, you know, that's pretty much what you and I do in most aspects of our lives. But a lot of Windows users, a lot of Windows developers, and a lot of Windows users alike, they really have this "it's good enough" attitude. They don't care about things like continuity continuity and that whole user experience. It's not, again, it's not even really part of their mindset. And you know, and I saw this a lot when I was doing computer repair work and consulting and that sort of stuff in the 90s. I saw it also when I had a web development business, and you know, like the Windows people had much lower expectations about what their website was going to be.
Oh yes.
And you know, Mac users tended to have much higher expectations. And anyway, we could go on and on about that, but the point is that Apple has had tremendous market share gains for the Mac platform, and that story has gone largely unnoticed
mm-hmm.
in the mainstream world.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you on that. But
I mean, certainly it's talked about, but no one, you know, I mean, it used to be a big deal about how small Apple's market share was.
You know, I'm thinking that it isn't as a sensational story for many of the media outlets. So maybe that's why it isn't getting as much coverage.
Yeah, the analysts pay attention. That's for sure.
Oh, yes.
Because they know, of course, that, you know, just how much money Apple makes off of its computer sales.
Yeah, and you know, I find that interesting that with Apple being able to show that, yes, you can actually make a decent profit off of your computers, why there aren't more companies that are trying to mimic that part of their business model?
How can they?
That's true. They've set themselves up so that they can't do that. You know,
and they don't have a proprietary system.
Right. And
so their competition is other PC makers who are making cheap boxes.
Right. And, you know, and I'd say that trend of PC makers essentially screwing themselves, I think that goes back to, what was that company? eMachines. Do you remember when they started making their computers that were similar in style or appearance to the original gumdrop Bondi Blue iMac?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They started selling these computers, excuse me, that were priced so far below what everyone else was making. And I think that really kicked off that trend of let's make a computer that the sole selling point is its price.
Hmm.
And Dell, they totally ran with that idea, and well, look where they are now.
Right. Well, you know, Dell is still making a profit, I think.
I don't know. Well, you know, they don't share their books with me, so.
Well, yeah, they do.
Well, no, by that I mean they're not coming over to my office and laying out their books and explaining the numbers to me. And frankly, that's really what I want them to do.
You know, that's an interesting thing right there, Jeff, is that we used to follow Dell pretty closely, in large part, of course, because Michael Dell and Kevin, whatever his name is, the guy that took over after Michael
stepped down
and drove the company further into the ground. They used to talk a lot of smack about Apple.
They did. Wasn't it Michael Dell that said that Apple should close up shop and give the money back to the investors?
Yep, sell off the assets and give the money back to investors. Sound financial advice, Michael, thanks. But it was he that said that, but it was also Dell that was taking market share away from Apple in the education space.
Right.
And, you know, it was Dell that was basically Dell was in the process of crushing everybody. And so it's kind of interesting that Dell just isn't as important anymore. You know, we definitely don't follow them all that closely, and that's because I think it's because they don't matter all that much anymore.
No, they really have lost their relevance.
I think so.
And
it's interesting.
Now, I'm sure that there's people that will completely disagree with us simply because of the sheer volume of computers that Dell sells. But I think from an overall market standpoint of, you know, the trends, the philosophies, they've really lost their relevance.
Yeah. Who makes your favorite toaster?
My toaster is silver. I don't even know who made it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think there's a good analogy there.
I agree.
Be that as it may. Oh, I think the one set of numbers that we had when we were putting together the show notes, the one set of numbers that we could really talk about is Gartner looking at Apple's U.S. market share.
Right.
In the September quarter for 2007, Apple had roughly 7.5%, 7.7% market share, and in the U.S. And then in the same period, we reported on this in October of 2008. In the same period for the 2008 year, Apple had 9.5% market share in the U.S.
That's a substantial increase.
it's a substantial increase, and it basically, yeah, 5% to me was always that magic number. If as long as Apple could get back up above 5%, there are no questions about the sustainability of the platform that I love.
And well, they've done that, so that's good. That means that you don't have to sit at home alone at night and cry because Apple's sustainable now.
Right. So I don't. That's good. And you know, at 9.5%, at least in the U.S., there are no questions about Apple's sustainability and survivability, et cetera. So yay.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, the thought of having to switch to another computer platform to me is just not appealing. The Mac does what I need. Yes, there's things that annoy me, but overall, I cannot imagine having to use a different computing platform and still be able to maintain the level of productivity that I like and that I need to have. I just can't see that happening with anything other than a Mac.
Nope. I would like to see Apple have another competitor in the proprietary space, but
Amiga died a sad, sad death.
That they did. And I don't think, as I've often said, Linux's greatest strength is also its greatest weakness, and that's the openness of the platform and the lack of control.
Right. And, you know, I think Apple is the example of how you take something like Linux and make it mainstream successful. And that's because Mac OS X, of course, is a Unix-based operating system. And,
right.
And Linux is also a Unix-based operating system. So Apple took that openness that goes along with the Linux side, but then wrapped it in their own special magic sauce and presented it to the public, and it's a mainstream operating system. It's something that my parents can use, and it doesn't matter that underneath the pretty interface, it's Unix.
Well, you know, I would like to see, I would actually even like to see, this will not happen. Microsoft would basically have to be willing to lose a lot of its Windows business for this to happen, and I don't think their company is willing to do that. But I would like to see either Microsoft or IBM come out with a new proprietary system on a closed platform. And to give Apple some competition in that space in order to keep Apple on its toes.
You know, I know that what I'm about to say is going to freak out some people and probably piss off a lot of people. But I think the one company that's in the best position to be able to totally take on Apple for the bar none best operating system there is Microsoft. And I think that if...
Okay.
And that's because even though we complain about Microsoft applications, the way Windows is written, all of that, Microsoft has some amazingly intelligent and talented programmers working for them. I mean, they'd have to be able to take what they've been given and actually make it work. So I think if Microsoft just said, okay, guys, here's the parameters. We want a kick-ass operating system. We want the best thing that you can possibly make. And just go and do it, and then let these incredibly talented developers go and do their thing and come back with a brand new, from the ground up, operating system. I think that they could probably come up with something that would totally give Apple a run for their money. But that's never going to happen.
It probably won't happen, but I've got to throw a couple more caveats into that. Microsoft does have some outstanding talent at the company.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't have is when those developers are getting their instructions, one of those instructions should be go make the kind of computer that you want to use.
You know, that's
because
a very
that's
good
not what
instruction.
They do now.
Yeah, that
right now it's make the computer, make the operating system that the big media companies are going to want to let their media be played on.
Right.
It's go make the operating system that has all the controls that the enterprise world needs to control what their minions do. It's go make the operating system that best leverages Microsoft properties in, you know, in chat, in media playing, in media creation. I mean, it's like, nope, they're never saying go make something that you want to use. They just don't do that.
Right. And that's exactly why we'll never see that incredible operating system from Microsoft that can compete with the quality of Mac OS X.
Yeah, but there would have to be one other caveat, and that caveat being, and we're going to make the hardware, so you don't have to worry about OEMs anymore.
Oh, can you imagine just how?
Don't worry about legacy. You don't have to have any legacy stuff anymore. Don't worry about the versions of Windows before it.
Yeah, and see, and that's a huge problem for Microsoft. This whole legacy thing. Mm-hmm. And I cannot see Microsoft ever being in a position where they could pull off what Apple has done twice, which is right. Take everything they've had up to that point, throw it out, and then start with something new.
Right. I totally agree. And it's kind of one of the dangers about being so big. I don't want to see Apple be bigger than, say, like, if, I don't know, I'm pulling this number out of my rear end, but 20% market share. That would be a cap for me, even as a shareholder, because I am a very, very small shareholder in the company. But my desire as a shareholder to see that stock increase in value is also saddled with my desire as a Mac user to be able to use the best platform possible. And I think that if Apple were to get that big, or any bigger than that, that it would face a nimbleness problem.
Okay, I can see that. And Apple's nimbleness, as you eloquently put it, is one of the company's strong suits. Mm-hmm. I think that if they didn't have that that ability to turn on a dime, so to speak, that we wouldn't see the products that we have today. I mean, I don't think we'd have an iPhone today. We wouldn't have these high-end Macs that are on the market today, and Mac OS X certainly wouldn't be where it is today. Actually, we probably wouldn't even have Mac OS X.
Maybe not.
And that's kind of a scary thought, maybe, because not. The idea of still using the what I will now call the legacy operating systems that comprised everything up through Mac OS 9, I don't want to be using operating systems.
Copeland,
like that.
Baby.
Oh, Copeland. Give me some pink action.
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of which, this is one of the things I think that Steve is wrong about, is Ellen Hancock. He dismissed her, and I think that she was awesome. And, you know, she and Gil alike. Did we say this on a podcast recently, or was I having a conversation with someone outside the podcast about
that was out
Gil not getting his proper due?
That was outside the podcast.
Yeah, Gil and Ellen Hancock together did a lot of the groundwork that made Steve Jobs' transition to firing them go as smoothly as it did.
You know, Gil Emilio, yes, he might look like a dork, but I mean, when he came in and started running Apple, he was the guy that was in the position that had to make the really tough calls and make the unpopular calls. And I know a lot of people do not like him, but I'm so glad that he ended up at Apple when he did, because you're right. He's the guy that was able to set everything up so that Steve Jobs could swoop in, fire his ass, and then really propel Apple to where it is today, so we can be sitting here talking about how they're approaching a 10% market share with the Mac.
Yep. Yes, Gil was not a product guy, and Gil was definitely not a didn't have a lot of vision in terms of product at the very least. But he was able to fire a bunch of people, and I'm sorry that they lost their jobs, but I should say he was able to trim a lot of projects that had just gotten completely out of control.
Right. Well, the entire product
Ellen
line.
Was the one.
Oh.
Yeah, sure. And Ellen was the one who had the cojones to call a spade and say that Copeland was not ready for prime time and would never be ready for prime time, and that it had also gotten out of control.
And she was right.
And she was right. And she's the one that recognized that next would be a good platform to buy. Yeah. You know, she did all these things. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. And she was right.
Steve has dismissed her, and he's dismissed Gil publicly, too. And I think that both those people need to be given more due. But that's really probably like a 1997 recap, not a 2008 recap.
All right. So, all right. So we're jumping around through time a little bit. That's okay. I mean, Doctor Who does it.
Doctor Who does do it. Speaking of Doctor Who, is there any Doctor Who on Audible?
You know, I bet there is. I mean, they have what? It's like crazy, like over 50,000 titles.
They do have 50,000. Hey, you know what?
Oh, do tell.
They're our sponsor this week.
No way.
They are.
And I just have to say, that was an incredible segue. and aren't you glad that I'm awake enough that I was actually able to pick up right away on where you were going?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. Well, but you know what? Quite frankly, I knew that you would be because you rock that way.
Well, thanks, dude.
All right. So seriously, Audible is our sponsor this week. These guys have been with us for the last couple of months, and we appreciate it.
Yeah.
And why don't you tell our listeners what Audible does?
Well, Audible distributes electronic versions of Audible books or spoken books. And they have over 50,000 titles to choose from, tons of different genres. And the files that you download, they're compatible with your Mac, with Windows computers. They're compatible with the iPod and the iPhone. So you can listen to books on the go. You can listen to them on your computer, whatever you like to do. And
I wonder if you can listen to them on a Zoom. Wait, not that today you can actually listen to anything on a Zoom. That should have made it into our top stories, but you know it's not really a top story.
Well,
it's a funny story.
No, I mean that's an important story because that's got to affect like 2 dozen people.
At least. All right, back to the good folk at Audible.
Okay, so the good folk at Audible, they like us and they like our listeners enough that they're offering a free book.
So
a free book, yeah.
Cool.
So if you go to audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly and sign up for an account, you can download a free audiobook.
And we have that link in the show notes.
We do.
We will.
Well,
let's be honest.
Okay, we will. But yeah, you know, we were doing the time travel thing a little earlier anyhow, so maybe we jumped ahead and yeah.
Yeah. So good. It's a good product. If you like listening to your books instead of reading them, great for traveling, great for the airplane, great for, you know, road trips, great for sleeping. If you want to go to sleep, I used to do that with, I think I've told our readers this, but with the copy of the Harry Potter book that Apple gave the media when they announced Audible coming on.
Oh, right.
I would go to sleep listening to the Harry Potter book, and it was always fun.
Well, that's cool. Kristen, you'd wake up the next morning and listen to some more, and you'd be thinking, wait, when did Harry go there? I thought Hermione was doing this thing because you slept through part of it.
Is that fabulous ticking noise? Snape. Severus Snape. All right, we should put a link to that, too. We'll have a link to the what is that show called?
I don't remember what it's called, but when
Potter. Oh no, I'm going to risk our readers thinking that we're idiots. By
I think it's a little late for looking. That.
Oh yeah, probably is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I'm so upset. All right, why don't you talk? Why don't you? I can find this. Why don't you actually do some talking about something more important, like. stock price, maybe.
Oh, sure, I can do that. All right, so while Brian is trying to figure out what this wonderful video is that we will be sharing with you, another big story this year is that Apple's stock price, it totally took a dive. And it's like to the tune of it dropped over $100 compared to its high point, which is, well, that's sucky for people that have a lot of stock in Apple because their stock isn't worth as much now. And One of the big things, though, that's really played into that stock decline is the overall weakness that's in the market right now. So, you know, it's not like Apple is losing stock value because no one's buying their products. I mean, clearly the iPhone's doing great. Mac market share is on the rise. So we have to look to some of these other outside factors that are playing a role in what's happening to the stock. And I think at this point in the game, it's not a secret to anyone that the economy in the United States pretty much sucks ass. And that's played a big role in Apple's stock decline, as well as a lot of other companies. But keep in mind, Apple's stock is holding its value better than many of its competitors.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. So first of all, it's the Potter Puppet Pals.
Potter Puppet Pals.
And the specific video that I'm talking about is the mysterious ticking noise. So Snape asks, what is that mysterious ticking noise? Not fabulous.
Mysterious. Not the, that's right.
It's not the homosexual Potter Puppet Pals. Be that as it may. Be that as it may, Apple has gone. They closed 12/31/2007 at $198.08 a share.
That's pretty sweet.
And today, they closed on this December 31st, 2008, $85.35.
Ouch!
That's a drop of $112.73 a share, or a 56.9% drop in value. Even while the company has actually had, we should look this up. Wasn't the September quarter a record quarter?
Yes, and actually, they've had a string of record quarters.
They have had a string of record quarters. So despite increasing performance, the stock price has gone down. And now, to be fair, a lot of what we've seen, a lot of the stock price that we've seen, just like Jeff was talking about, the economic factors, the broader economy, a lot of Apple's value is always built on future expectations of earnings.
Right.
Even much more so even than other tech companies.
Well,
because, you know, everyone's always looking ahead to Apple. So
right.
What we've got right now is a lot of concern that some of those previously anticipated future earnings will be lower because of the economy.
You know, the stock market is just a messed up place, isn't it?
It can sometimes be a messed up place, but like, let me look at what their their PE is as soon as I find it. PE 15.9. Apple used to trade at around a 30 PE. Now it's down to 15.9. You know, a big chunk of their stock price is actually supported by enormous cash holdings and stuff. So, you know, all those fundamentals are still pretty strong. And most analysts expect Apple to be able to ride out the current economic environment, the current economic crisis even, mm-hmm. better than many other companies.
You know, one thing that people were looking at least for a while, was Apple's market cap, and mm-hmm. then comparing it to other tech companies. And it was interesting that I think it was during Macworld Expo in 2007, Apple passed Dell's market cap. And that was like a huge thing because Dell's the big guy.
Right.
And they've continued to go up, and then they started passing a lot of other big companies. And at some point, I can't even remember when it was now, they eventually passed IBM. And you know, that market cap thing was a big deal for a lot of people for a while. But then once the economy started to really tank, I really haven't heard anyone talking about any of these companies' market caps anymore, probably because it would make them very sad to do that.
Well, you know, Google, at one point they were, didn't they pass Google?
They may have.
At one point? I think we did a story on that. I can't remember. At least they came close. But right now, Google's got a market cap of $96.8 billion after today's close, and Apple's market cap is at $75.9, and Dell is, oh, $19.9.
Oh.
Oops.
Maybe they should just sell off the assets and give the money back to the shareholders.
They don't have very many assets. Microsoft's market cap in comparison is $172.9 billion, with a PE of only 10, though. So you look at Google's PE is 19. It's higher than Apple's. Apple's PE is at 15.9, and Microsoft's PE is 10.3, and that's because, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily expect Microsoft to be able to have a lot of growth opportunities where Apple does.
Right.
Of course, you know, another big thing for Apple stock price has been Steve Jobs' health and concerns about that health, I should say.
Yeah, that's actually been a huge thing. And
it has been.
And it was a few months ago, there was someone that decided that it would be fun to post an anonymous report on, was it CNN's website, where it's like a blog that's set up, anyone can post on it?
I Report,
that's it. And it was about Steve Jobs having a heart attack. Completely bogus.
Yes.
Completely bogus.
It turned out to be a kid basically thinking he was funny.
Right. And it just totally tanked Apple's stock that day. I mean, as soon as the news, and when I say news, I'm using that word completely wrong because it was not news at all. But as soon as the information was released from this kid, Apple's stock started to drop because everyone just assumed that the story was completely legit.
Right. Right. Which is, of course, you know, one of the downsides of having internet quote unquote reporting. You know, with every good side, there's usually, if not always, a bad side. And I'm all for the proliferation of information. But, you know, sometimes you do have these sorts of things happen. There was a lot of immediate speculation when he had done that the person behind it was someone, you know, who was really into short selling Apple.
Right. And that would have been a great way for a short seller to make a ton of money.
Yeah, until they got caught. And, of course, it just turned out to be a dumb kid with a dumb idea for a dumb joke.
Right. And, boy, was that an expensive joke.
Yeah. What ended up happening to him, I wonder?
I don't know. I know that there was an SEC investigation into the whole thing.
He was quickly found.
Oh, he was very quickly found. Yeah. And
and they also found very specifically that he didn't appear to have any financial interest in seeing the stock price go down. So not much might have happened. I don't actually know.
Yeah, that kind of fizzled out after a while. Mm-hmm. So probably nothing happened to him.
So what's the deal? What do you think about Steve's health? I know that one of the stories that we just did was about Gizmodo saying that they had a supposedly reliable source saying that Steve's not healthy.
Right. You know, I think that there's too much emphasis being put on his health. And I'll just come right out and say it. I think Gizmodo's story is wrong. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with Steve Jobs' health. And if I'm completely wrong on that, well, okay, that's a horrible thing because that means he's really sick, and that's just bad for him and for his family and everyone else. But I don't think
that's the case. Well, something's going on with him, though, because he has lost a lot of weight.
Okay, well, keep in mind that he's a pancreatic cancer survivor.
Yes.
And for people that are pancreatic cancer survivors, their ability to digest food isn't nearly as good as it used to be. So he looks exactly like he's supposed to look for someone that has survived what he has gone through. Now, I'm sure that there's a doctor out there that's going to go, holy crap, you're not a doctor, are you? Because
write in and talk to us about it.
Yeah, so if there's someone that understands this in more depth than I do, yeah, please fill us in. But from everything that I've seen, what I've read, what I have been told by people in the medical field, he looks exactly as he ought to.
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of things, a couple of sort of circumstantial things. Apple has not made public a succession plan.
Right.
Succession plan, not a secession plan.
I don't think they're leaving the union, no.
And of course, they have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to make sure that the CEO isn't a problem, so to speak. I'm greatly simplifying.
Right.
So the fact that the board of directors is maintaining that Steve's health is a personal issue, and because of the fact that they haven't released a public succession plan, I think that there is every possibility in the world that you know, Steve is as healthy as he should be for a pancreatic cancer survivor, and that he continues to do his job just fine.
And I think that's exactly the case. Now, there's a lot of people that are thinking differently, and it's interesting because, but you know, I follow Twitter closely, and I've been seeing comments from people that I would have, under other circumstances, been surprised to see. And not like they're saying bad things, but they're making comments like, oh, wow, this is really sad. Steve Jobs is practically on his deathbed kind of comments. And they're just picking up on stories like the one that Gizmodo ran. And mm-hmm. And so just on this Gizmodo thing, I, you know, I've made it very clear that I think that their story is wrong. Mm-hmm. I am not, however, saying that I think they made it up. It would not surprise me if they really did have someone that came to them and said, look, here's what's going on. And that person that gave them that information is wrong.
Well, you know, they presented it in a very straightforward manner.
Right.
They said, we've got a source who's given us product information that has turned out to be accurate. We don't really know if what he's saying about Steve's health is accurate, but he's been accurate in the past, and then we're telling you that, and we're telling you what he told us.
Right. So, you know, they handled that part as well as they could with
as well as they could.
Yes. So, you know, that's good. Part of the problem, though, is that for some reason people think that when they see something on the internet, it's gospel.
Right.
And so, well, and that's what happened to that iReport thing. People took that as gospel mm-hmm. and ran with it. And that's kind of what happened with the Gizmodo story as well. And Apple stock went down because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, you know, this whole thing with Steve Jobs' health, it's unfortunate first that he had to go through all of this because, you know, no one wants to go through cancer, and especially pancreatic mm-hmm. cancer. But it's doubly unfortunate because it has become the focal point of so many stories, and I don't think it's as relevant as people are making it out to be right now.
I would imagine that's the case, and I don't think that it had anything to do with Apple pulling out of Macworld, and I don't really think it had anything to do with Steve not giving the last Macworld keynote.
I agree. And I actually, wasn't it on last week's show that I said that I think that Steve not giving the keynote is simply because he has no interest in Macworld Expo anymore, therefore he won't go.
Yeah, and that's what Ted said.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I think. I think that is exactly the case. And so, be that as it may, at least Steve has a sense of humor about it. At the last media event, if you remember, he put a slide up that said, "Reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated."
Yes, that was
quoting, of course, Mark Twain,
or paraphrasing Mark Twain. I can't remember if it was an exact quote, or it doesn't matter. It was wonderful, and it was a great use of Mark Twain's words.
Mm-hmm. It was. So that would leave us with the other big story of the year, probably a lot bigger than most people realize, and that's this being what we're jokingly also calling the year of the App Store.
Right. And so that wraps us up as a nice package, actually, because we started with the year of the iPhone, and here we are with the year of the App Store, and they go hand in hand.
Right.
Yeah. Once Apple made the App Store available to iPhone and iPod Touch owners, they took those devices from simply being, in the case of the iPhone, a really cool smartphone, and in the case of the iPod Touch, to being a really cool iPod, and turned those into a new platform, really.
Yep. With hundreds of millions of application downloads. Now, we said this a couple of months ago, that you know, Apple says 300 million downloads, and that really probably includes all the updates too.
It probably does. But still, that's a lot of applications being downloaded.
It is a lot of applications being downloaded. And I had written a column, if you remember, shortly after the App Store was announced. Now, part of my premise for that column was wrong. I made a mistake. Part of that premise was that Apple was selling the iPhone 3G so cheaply because it expected to make up the difference between the original iPhone and the iPhone 3G from App Store royalties.
Right, and it turns out that it's companies like AT&T that are making up that difference.
Yeah, the subsidies are coming from the carriers, just like all the other phones that are out there.
Right.
And not but that said, I do think that the App Store is going to become an increasingly important revenue stream from Apple. And I think that the numbers that we've already seen from Apple show just how much money they can make. They made $30,000 from iFart Mobile in basically a week and a half. Cha-ching.
I'm sorry. It just makes me laugh when you say iFart. I know how much you love that word.
I don't even like that word even a little bit.
And I'm like 12, yeah, so of course I laugh.
when you look at just how many applications are being downloaded, and of course, you know, the vast majority of them are free, but a lot of them aren't free.
Right.
The App Store is a big deal, and it's a big deal not only in terms of revenue, but in this whole concept of the iPhone being a platform cannot be, I'm going to say this again, I know I said it earlier in the show, but it just can't be overemphasized on how important that is, because you've got people considering this handheld phone to be a mobile computing device. And you know, that's huge in terms of mind share. It's huge in front. You know, how much more press coverage has Apple gotten for the iPhone because of both individual apps and the App Store as a whole?
You know, I probably can't count high enough.
Exactly.
I mean, the App Store is it's an Apple magnet. It draws consumers in. And it draws the media in, like flies to honey, mm-hmm. which I was about to not say honey, but flies to honey. And it's like a beacon that's just drawing everyone in. And mm-hmm. there's so many apps there, and good apps and bad apps, and the bad apps are drawing a lot of good publicity for Apple as well. Apple can't buy the kind of publicity that they're getting because of the App Store.
No, they can't, which is maybe why another reason why they were willing to pull out of Macworld.
Yeah. I hate to see them out of Macworld, but I'm certain that it's a fiscally responsible decision for them based on all the factors that they had to take into account.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. So you're the App Store. It's huge. It's a big deal. It's been a big year for the company. Even while like in the last few months, we've seen the world has seen a lot less, what am I trying to say? You know, the economic stuff that's going on is a bad deal, and it's going to have a negative impact on Apple. But the year as a whole has still been just huge for the company.
It has been
huge.
And my prediction is that Apple will continue moving forward in a very strong and positive way. They have a really strong product lineup right now, and I have no doubt that they're going to have some surprises in store for us in 2009, especially after Snow Leopard comes out, simply because Snow Leopard is going to be able to take advantage of Apple's hardware more efficiently than Leopard does today and earlier versions of Mac OS X did. So I think that there's some surprises in store for us next year.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And Snow Leopard. I haven't been as excited about a version of the operating system since probably macOS 10 itself or 10.1. And this is because I have a Mac Pro with 8 cores that largely don't get used.
Yeah, well, that's going to change once you install Snow Leopard.
Yeah, I just can't. I cannot wait for all these under the hood enhancements. And plus, you know what? It'll be kind of fun not to have to worry about learning the new ins and outs of a new interface.
Right.
To be honest, I don't know how many people are going to be willing to say that, but Snow Leopard is going to be huge, and it's going to be huge in other ways too, because every Mac shipping now is a multi-core computer.
Right. And now all the laptops that are shipping, they have the new video processors in them that include the extra processor, and that's going to come into play when Snow Leopard comes out.
Right. Yeah, so everybody with a multi-core Mac or Mac laptop is going to be seeing amazing, at least what I think are going to be amazing improvements with Snow Leopard. And it's going to, in my opinion, it's going to be a really big deal.
I think so too. I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on that.
Indeed. But you know what? We're already over an hour, and this is a wrap up on 2008, and we're starting to look forward to 2009. So maybe we should cut it.
We probably should. But you know, it was okay to run a little bit longer. This was a leap year.
That's a good point. And we got an extra second too.
Oh, we did. So all right. So all right. So the fastest way to wrap this up is for me just to jump in and say, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And, of course, feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut. And you can see all the little things that go on inside my head.
And you can follow me at Twitter at tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. This episode was sponsored by Audible. And, you know, throw in a little bit of extra something. Thank you to all of our listeners for us having a really good 2008. And I want to thank you personally for being my broadcasting partner on this. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, well, thanks for stepping in when I needed a new co-host. This has been absolutely great podcasting with you. I love it.
Yeah, likewise, man. Likewise. So that's all for this week.
And of course, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.